You know, when I'm dealt a set of cards, you look at that and you go, right, well, I can deal with this several ways, obviously. But for me, there's no point in stressing about stuff or doing whatever. You know, there needs to be a period of time where I'm going to have to go through something. But actually, in the whole scheme of things, that's going to be a relative.
Welcome to the ROH Boys special, everyone. Now, the ROH Boys consists of myself, a bloke called Sonny, and a bloke called Dave. I first met these absolute two legends on the ward in the Royal Orthopaedic Hospital during my February surgery of this year. The surgery was a full hip replacement, and being an 18-year-old, I was very scared of what the future may hold for myself. But being in a ward of these two absolute legends, and I keep calling them legends because they are legends, really changed my outlook on what hospital stays can be like. Us three having the banter between us on this tiny corner of a tiny ward in the middle of a massive hospital really did change the outlook of my future. So for all these years of work I've put into my A-levels, and then suddenly pretty much a couple of months before my A-levels is due, having to go through another major surgery and being set back to square one after all that recovery time, I was feeling very down on myself. These two lads really helped boost my morale and, you know, just made it feel like a really great time within the hospital, which feels really weird. But you'll see what I mean when you listen to this episode. Unfortunately, Sonny couldn't make it on the episode this week, just for many different reasons. But I did manage to catch up with Dave and had a really long chat with him. I'm not going to spoil it too much. I think we can leave it to the actual episode. But I just want to say this one's a really special one, especially for anyone who's going to be going through a hospital treatment any kind of time in their life or currently listen to this. Please give it a listen and enjoy the episode. So I want to take it back to start really for you. Tell us just a bit about yourself and your career and what hospital stays you've had in your life and what you've had to really go through throughout your journey.
Well, yeah, I mean, unfortunately, it started quite a long time ago. I think probably the first major one was I was 19 years old when I was involved in a car accident. I was just a passenger in a taxi. On the way to the airport to fly back to see my parents in Southern Ireland, or stay with them for, I think it was some holidays, I think, or part of it. I don't remember anything from getting into the taxi to go to East Midlands Airport till 10 days afterwards. Don't remember anything at all. I was in a coma for 3 days, apparently, but even when I was conscious, I don't recall anything or any conversations or anything that was going on during that period. I'm reliant on family telling me what was going on. And in that particular episode, it was I broke my pelvis. I had a bad bang on the head because seatbelts weren't compulsory in those days, and I was in the back seat. Lots of associated bits that were interesting, but I'm very much someone that looks at these things that happen in your life and try to put a positive spin on them. And, you know, what came out of that was that, you know, at the age of 19, the incredible realization that, you know, I could literally get up and walk out of the house that morning and everything be over and done with and be finished. So as a 19-year-old, not, you know, doing okay, but not hugely confident in every aspect of their life, primarily chatting to women, shall we say, you start thinking, well, why am I questioning myself? Why am I thinking, well, no, I won't ask that question. I won't ask her out, or I won't do this, I won't do that. And getting down to brass tacks, I think, you know, within that time when I became conscious and I was aware again of myself being there, I made some decisions and about, you know, not wasting time and all that sort of stuff. And there was a girl that I really liked at the college. And 2 days after I got back, I started seeing her, and we went out with each other for 4 years because I wasn't going to hang about anymore. Do you know what I mean? If you don't ask the question, you don't get the answers. And you shouldn't be afraid of the answer being no occasionally, or the answer not being the right one. So that was probably my first sort of real use of the NHS to any sort of certain degree, because you know that I had lots of things to follow up on and lots of ongoing medication following that, and but learned a lot of lessons, and I very much take it as a positive thing that happened in my life to set me off in the right course, in the right direction. I think the other main thing for me, there's been lots of minor, you know, breaks or injuries or things like that, but after the when I had that accident, they had to do a full scan on the body to find out what was going on, because I couldn't tell them what was hurting or what was broken or what was happening. I wasn't conscious. And the scan, as they went past the kidneys, they sort of noted that possible polycystic kidneys, which is is traditionally a hereditary disease, even though we know no one else in the family that's had it. It was a matter of months after I'd got back to university and restarted my degree course that I then discovered I had high blood pressure, which was again related to to the kidneys. And so from that point onwards, that my kidneys were being monitored, even though to a very small degree, but being monitored over the years, and then eventually packed up. Oh. Cripes. Sometime in the 2010s, I imagine, and so I had to go on to dialysis, and then had a kidney transplant in 2017. So lots of stuff associated with the renal function and the renal transplant, and the removal of both my kidneys, which was a huge operation. I think the surgeon likened it to what you've gone through is the equivalent to have been hit by a double-decker bus.
Absolutely.
So that was a big one as well. So I mean, there are lots of episodes where it's been touch and go, shall we say, and there've been scenarios where I may not have made it out of it and things like that, which have always added a little bit of excitement.
What I like the most is obviously you had your accident at 19. I'm 19 now. I had an accident when I was 14. You said
Yes.
to me before we started this interview that it sort of definitely shaped the way you see things, 100% for me as well. Do you think now you've also got your son yourself now? Does that also sort of pass on the way you've seen things for the last, you know, couple of decades ever since you had the accident? Do you think that's always channeled a view differently to things your peers would see?
I think I always have the underlying bit there, but it does gradually, it starts to wane after a period of time. So, you know, initially you'll have a real thrust, you know, that says, don't waste your time, don't do anything. And, you know, you're very much driven to ensure that the things that you feel are important are the things that take priority. Like for me, I was so glad to hear that you're planning your trip over to Africa to do teaching and things like that. You know, the most important thing to me was always to see the world, was to make sure that, you know, this little planet that we live on, and it is a little planet with flights today and where you can get to, and it's tiny, and there's no excuses for not going to explore and find out what it's all about. And it was so important to me to ensure that I made, you know, when I could and I was able to go and do some traveling, and I was able to work in some of these places. So I've been able to do a bit of work out in Africa as well, and in the Middle East and places like that. But it's as you get a bit older, there are other things that come into consideration, I suppose. So, you know, even now, I suppose with my son who's 14 now, I try and instill in him how important it is to go and travel. And I took him off to Australia last Christmas and New Year, and so we went over there for 3 weeks. And you know, at the age of well, he would have been 13 then. You know, he's been to the other side of the world and being able to do some of these things. And I just want his mind to be full of the fact that the world is full of opportunities. And you can go and see what else is out there. I don't know yet whether that's something that he's going to stick with, because he seems very, very stuck on wanting to work in the agricultural sector, and likes living in Herefordshire. And whenever he gets an opportunity, he will drive a tractor, even though he's not disposed to, and all those sort of things. So he's,
But I
yeah.
mean that's a good thing to hear, really, because I mean I think you'll feel the same way when you have an accident like that, even at a young age. Obviously, everything else you've been through, when you've been hospital bound, whatever, every opportunity to get given to you, you obviously grasp it, because you never know really how much time you have left to do it.
100%, 100%, and I mean, I don't know whether you agree with me now, Henry. I mean, you say you've had the same things, because obviously it happened to you so young, such a young age. But you've always struck me, even from the first time we met, as a very accomplished young man, and quite sure about what you want to do, and you seem to have your head screwed on. And that's not something you can say about a lot of young men of your age, because a lot of them are living in,
Absolutely.
haven't really got a grasp on reality to a degree, and what the world's going to bring for them, and all that sort of stuff. So, I mean, do you feel the same yourself, having had that experience, as horrible as it would have been?
Absolutely. I think when I talk to people now, I don't know if you agree with this, but I always say I'd rather still have the accident than have this mindset I have now, rather than not have it. And then people will sort of look at you and think you're mad. But the person I was before the accident, I mean, I was still very young, obviously. I didn't know what I'd develop if I didn't have the accident. But I've just, even at school last year, I was just crazy busy from about seven. Obviously, lucky enough to be born in school, so we'd start at 7:30 in the morning, finish at 9:30, 10 o'clock sometimes, because the duties I had as an upper six lad. And I just grasp all these opportunities and whatever, and everything. You're saying you're doing too much, but I just think I would never be able to do this if I hadn't had the right surgery, or if I hadn't been lucky enough to survive something like that. And it's great you're instilling that in your son and whatever, because I try and do that with other people and say you've got to grasp these opportunities now, because you don't know what could happen. You could go and get hit by a car or whatever the next day, and never be able to get the opportunity to ever do that again. So it's great to hear that. Obviously, with the dialysis and stuff, that must have been mentally quite a challenging time, because it is just you've got to sort of sit there and wait it out, rather than it being surgery and then working from it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think I don't know what goes on in my head. I think sometimes I'm wired a little bit differently, and I put a lot of it down to the fact of the experiences I had when I was younger, with the accident and things like that. But when I'm dealt a set of cards, you look at that and you go, right, well, I can deal with this several ways, obviously. But for me, there's no point in stressing about stuff or doing whatever. There needs to be a period of time where I'm going to have to go through something. But actually, in the whole scheme of things, that's going to be a relatively short proportion of my life. Now, yeah, I mean, the way that I did my dialysis was to do what's called peritoneal dialysis, which is the one that you can do at home and you do overnight. So actually, you're actually dialyzing whilst you're asleep. Now, I've got to plug in, or I had to plug in every night at sort of 10 o'clock at night, so I wouldn't really have late nights and things like that. And you'd be on there for a number of hours, but then that would allow me to get up in time to go to work the next day. So actually, my day-to-day activities with regard to working and existing sort of continued to some degree relatively unchanged, with some slight modifications. But then but yes, every night I'd have to plug into a machine and dialyze overnight, and I'd have to be extremely careful about making sure that everything was clean and was, the infection risk is always there when you're dealing with those sort of things. So, you have to be very careful about looking after yourself and making sure the environment that you're in is great. And I was fortunate enough to live in a house that the house that we owned was nicely set up with the en suite beside, so that I could run tubes and pipes and whatever I needed to do. So, and you just get used to the routine, and it's something that you had to go through. And unfortunately, my mentality can allow me to rationalize that in some way, that it's just something you've got to do. I always feel, and I don't know whether you'll agree with this, whether it's the medical procedure that I'm doing, like for example the dialysis, or the fact that you're being in an accident, the people that get it worst aren't you as an individual. It's your family.
Yeah.
It's the people that support you and love you. Your parents or your brothers and sisters or whoever it is. Those are the ones that actually really have to go through the rigmarole, because the thing is, it's happening to you. You have to just deal with it, and so that's what you do as an individual. But it's the people on the periphery that have to that watch it and see other things that I think find it more difficult than the individual themselves.
Yeah, something that I want to highlight a bit more because it is, yeah, I almost has an argument if the support network, actually your close family and friends probably go through it worse than you do.
Yeah,
Because,
I think so.
like I said, for my sister, she had a GCSEs and A levels and stuff, and that really affected her because she had to look after me while I was in a wheelchair, etc. And it's just people don't think about that side. And then I sort of spent a couple of years, I'd say, being a bit selfish and always thinking about myself. And then you sort of look back and think, actually, bugger me, that's actually how much they've had to put in as well. It changes the whole family shape around you, doesn't it?
Yeah, no, completely, completely. And I think that my at the time, whilst I was still studying in the UK, my parents had moved back. My mum's Irish. My parents had moved to Ireland and were running a nursing home. They bought and ran a nursing home. My sister was over there schooling at school, so she was still in the equivalent to secondary school or high school or whatever. And so, all of a sudden, my mum and dad have to find people that are going to be prepared to look after a business for them. And thankfully we have got sort of a family support network over there, but people have to step up and step in and take over control of stuff. And whilst your parents and your sister and people are, they're just absolutely mortified about what's going to happen to you going forward. And unfortunately, I think over the years I've caused my family their fair due of stress and worry, with various things that go on. They're always sort of on speed dial, and one of the last things, one of the more recent things that would have happened. I mean, I've had a couple of bouts of sepsis, and one of those was really, really quite traumatic. I dropped off the edge of the cliff really quite dramatically when it took hold, and I remember having a conversation on the telephone, or trying to have a conversation on the telephone with my sister, sort of saying that I wasn't feeling great. But I was slurring all my words. I could barely speak, and everything like that. And it was her that called the ambulances and got people to the house. But she lives in bloody Surrey. Do you know what I mean? It's not like she's round the corner and could provide support. I think I'm a constant worry for them in one way or another. But there we go.
So my wife, and that's because I'm so accident prone, probably a bit like yourself. But I want to move that on to the first time we met. So actually in hospital, I've actually named this episode the RRH Boys because I explained it before. It's because it was us two and Donny. And how was that first encounter for you? Obviously, you just had shoulder surgery, didn't you, on your left shoulder, I believe.
No, it's my right shoulder. Yeah,
Right shoulder,
there
sorry.
was an injury from a very, very long time ago that it used to keep popping out and dislocating. And I'd had surgery on it when I was much younger, and to stop it popping out, but arthritis and just the anchors had moved and everything. And over the many, many years it had been there, it just got worse and worse and got more and more painful. And it used to hurt to brush my teeth or to shave. It was just silly little things. I used to have pain in it most of the time. So thankfully, the guys at the Mr. Hussein, I think you have Mr. Hussein as well.
So same as well, yeah, both that's the same
He's,
sort.
I'll tell you what, he's a bit of a legend, that bloke. He looked at it for me, and it's bloody tremendous now. I haven't got a problem with it at all, pain wise or anything like that. It's only down to my lack of physio that it's not as strong as it should be, but actually it's really quite strong, and I don't have any pain from it, and it was something that needed to be done. But that particular stay, Henry, I've probably said to you at the time, it's probably the best hospital stay I've ever had. Ever had, just because of the company. I don't know
Absolutely.
what you feel.
That's what I was going to say. It's almost obviously talking about how people, I mean, it's quite weird because we see it as normal because of what we have to go through. I'm not trying to big ourselves up here, but if that makes sense. Whereas people who've never really been in hospital don't really know what it's like. And I think it is definitely the people you're with or community. If everyone's sort of positive, I mean, you've got someone who's just lost his leg on the other side of the room trying to keep positive, you know, it's just like you almost laugh. We were laughing at ourselves at one point, weren't we? And I definitely think it's the community within the hospitals that keeps the spirit up. You can have people there who were, I mean, the people in the ward who had cancer and stuff through their limbs and whatever, and obviously Sonny had sepsis and stuff. And I wouldn't say mine was so serious because it was sort of could be managed, but you see what I mean? It can really be a positive environment, can really make it such a better place to be.
I don't regret this, but one of the things that I said at the time, I don't know if you recall this, but I found it quite shocking for myself because I think I was talking to you across the ward, and I hadn't really seen who was next to me yet. I hadn't been introduced to Sonny, who was beside me, and I think I made the comment that actually, no matter how bad you feel that your situation is, hospital's a very good leveler because there's always someone who's actually a bit worse off than you. And you know, and I know that the purpose isn't to go there to make yourself feel better because, cripes, thank goodness you're not him. But that's the sort of comment I'm making. There's always someone a little bit worse off than you. And then I think the nurse pulled back the curtain, and I could see Sonny sitting beside me, who's minus a leg. And I all of a sudden, even though Sonny was joining in the conversation and stuff like that, it was a bit of a, oh, cripes, okay. So there's me, and I'm sitting here, and all that's happened is they're trying to repair my shoulder, which I could still had use of. And then the bloke beside me's minus his leg. And funnily enough, I never really got to hear much of the backstory as exactly what went on with yours, and you know, and the difficulties that you were having, mate. So, you know, if you don't mind, a bit of an insight would be.
Yeah, so for me, I had a surgery in 2021, which was basically called a hip resurfacing. So in the same hospital, by a chap called Ronan Tracy, that was basically to stop a vascular necrosis because all the blood vessels had been torn apart. It basically meant that the hip basically degrades over time. So for me, it was just needed a metal plate and restructuring. So that's what happened. But unfortunately, late last year, early this year, it basically fractured and displaced because I'd grown so much, etc. So the reason that I was in the hospital at the same time as you was because of having like a full hip replacement, if that makes sense, on the left side. So yeah, it was a like we said, as a teenager, it wasn't perfect time either because I was a bit pissed off because I literally just had my A levels at the same time, or the A levels mocks or when I was having the surgery, and I'd worked really hard for them. So that's the stuff you have to deal with when you have these sort of surgeries.
I mean, that was horrendous. I mean, remind me, if you don't mind, remind me what happened in the first place, mate, to cause the problems. Because didn't you have an accident at home on the farm or something?
So it was the 2nd of April 2020. So literally the second week of lockdown. Lambing season, so one of the busiest times on the farm for us because we're livestock farmers, and was on an old Massey 35, so one of the old, imagine, picturesque sort of tractors that you'd have in the old days. We've got a farm that we use, and you have a livestock box on the back, which so it's like a hydraulic box on the back, which you attach to the back to put the sheep in, and it lifts up and down, so you can transport them around the farm, etc., without having to walk, if that makes sense. So it's quicker, more efficient. So I went to try and get some in, couldn't do it by myself. Headed back towards the farm, and as I was getting off the tractor to close the gate, I'd put the hydraulic box down, act as a handbrake because they don't actually have handbrakes, these old tractors. Left the engine running, which I shouldn't have done. They think, I can't quite remember because I, you know, got kicked out so quickly. They think I caught my leg on the gear stick in between because it's in between your legs, and it basically set me under, crushed me, and then the hydraulic box was what did the main damage, which just scraped me and dislocated my hip and crushed my pelvis and ribs, etc. So I mean, I spent quite a few months recovering in 2020. Actually looked like I was gonna make a quite full recovery because you couldn't really diagnose with acid necrosis until later. They always made it aware that it was going to be a possibility for me. But I mean, it was the weird thing about it was because second week COVID, so that I was going into hospital while the whole hospital was being shut down basically because of coronavirus. So that was a scary bit. I had to do it most of my own, like being a 14-year-old going for that by myself because you're not allowed family and whatever in to see you because it was that strict because no one knew what it was, etc.
That's massive, isn't it? It's massive, mate.
Yeah, so had that recovered, and then within a couple of months, a bit like what you've been through, just through scans or whatever, I just started like losing ability to walk on my left side, and it was just getting horrendously pain. And we got diagnosed by vasculitis, but you have to wait till you're really the body's fully developed before you can have a hip resurfacing or even a hip, kind of any kind of hip replacement. So I basically had to enjoy a bit like yourself with dialysis. I had to basically enjoy a year of absolutely excruciating pain and not being able to walk, and then nothing anyone can do. Waited out until I could have the surgery in 2021, and then I had a cracking couple of years, recovered really well, and then it just went back downhill. But we're back on the up now, so that's really it. I mean, you can't really sum it up, can you, in a couple of in a podcast episode? But yeah, that's basically the majority of it.
Well, do you know what? If it gets you back to a point whereby you can actually go and do, carry on with your life and be able to go and do things like Africa and stuff like that, that's just amazing, isn't it, mate? Because it's, we all, I suppose that's some of the basis of your podcasts, about the NHS and stuff. But
Yeah.
that what they have done for me over the years, and I've seen some atrocious things, right? Let's not get us wrong, and we can touch on those and stuff like that. But what they've been able to do for me is just absolutely astonishing, and likewise for yourself. And you just think, it's remarkable, really, how good they can be. And unfortunately, the times when I think I've seen things below par have only ever really been down to the fact that they don't have the resource. They don't have the
Yeah.
resource available to them to be able to provide the level of care that they would like to be able to do.
And yeah, it's sad really, isn't it? Because they are, even saying with Mr. Hussein, it's just, he's incredible. The surgeons, they're just incredible what they can just do. And I was speaking to mum about this actually. It was just like, what's the way they can just change someone's life in a couple of hours, and they just think it's, all in a day's work, that sort of thing. You've been waiting for this for years, whatever, surgery. Even Hussein, who just looked at your shoulder and went, "Oh, I'll be able to do that." He did say for my hip, probably one of the rarest cases they say they've ever seen, or especially for a child to have that sort of injury and the way that it had prolapsed and whatever, and it completely, come apart. The last surgery was like a lot. The first surgeon I went to, he said he couldn't do it. It was just too much. Hussein sort of said, "Oh, but a few nails in there, a few screws in here, it'd be right as rain." It was like, you meet the right surgeon, you've got it. But the resources aren't there, are they, for the
No,
able to progress and actually, yeah.
you're very right on the meeting the right surgeon is sometimes the right thing, because I know that there's a lot of them in an R-ing with regard to me and my kidney was as it, when I'm on dialysis about the fact that it was failing, and because I had polycystic kidneys, poly being obviously many cysts, so the many cysts on my kidneys. So my original kidneys, instead of being approximately 9 centimeters long, which is a normal person's, each of my kidneys were in excess of 30 centimeters long. They were
Yeah.
massive, mate. When they took my kidneys out, they removed 17 kilos.
Really?
I'm
Wow.
17 kilos in weight. That's how big they were, and the thing is, there's lots of fanning about by various people in the lead up to it. I'm in an R-in, or should we take your kidneys out or leave them where they are? Where are we going to put the next one in? And how will we do this? Blah blah blah. And then I sat down the first time I met a chap called Mr. Reddy, and he certainly was ready for me, because I walked in and he goes, "Right, we need to stop messing about. We're going to get those two kidneys out. Let's get them removed. And then 6 months later, we'll get your new kidney in. And it literally almost went like clockwork with regard to his time scales, because he just went, right, okay, that's it. Well, let's get you in. We'll get those out. And it's just, you need somebody with that inherent confidence in their ability and the knowledge of what they're doing to just make the decision and go for it, rather than lots of umming and ahhing. And I can understand people wanting to make sure and not rush off and do something that might be a bit too drastic, but he was it was meeting that right surgeon and him making those decisions and getting things done rather than the fanning about. So
Absolutely, absolutely. And obviously, I want to touch on your testicular cancer as well. I mean, you've had the fair wars, to be fair, mate. And fair play to you, you've kept your head up high. How was dealing with that? Because that when you hear cancer, it's quite serious, isn't it? Really, you get
Well,
hit
I
with
think,
that.
I've been a bit, I became aware of this sort of, not so much the testicular cancer in me, but the fact that when you have an organ transplant, they then have to put you on anti-rejection medication. So they suppress your immune system and keep it down low so that you don't reject your transplanted organ. And obviously that has implications, doesn't it, on everything. Like now, I mean, only yesterday I went and had the latest in my list of COVID booster jabs, because I still have to protect myself a little bit more than others
Absolutely,
because of my
yeah.
suppressed immune system. But I became aware of this initially when actually it was the head. Follow this one if you can. So the head teacher of the primary school that my son was at, she donated her kidney to her husband,
Okay.
who was a very nice chap, a reverend, a really nice guy. And I remember seeing him on my way into the QE, where they look after many of the renal patients, the QE up in Birmingham, the QE hospital. And I saw him. We were both walking into the QE one day, and I was just having a chat. And I thought he was just going in for a normal checkup on his renal function, like I would be. But actually, he was going in because he'd got, I can't remember exactly which one it is. It might have been pancreatic cancer, but a cancer had come on since he had the transplant. And because obviously you've gone in, you've had this life-saving, well, not life-saving, because obviously you can do dialysis, but you've had this life-changing surgery to actually allow you to function a bit better. And then I think because everybody's immune system then drops after that, it can't fight things it would have necessarily been doing beforehand. And so the cancer's come out on him, and unfortunately he probably passed away maybe a year after that because of the cancer. And you think, oh my God, that's an absolute bloody nightmare. But then I think that may also be exactly the same reason as to why, my testicular cancer was came on after I'd had my transplant. And I think again, it's because I imagine it's because the immune system is suppressed and it doesn't fight like it probably was doing so beforehand, and it became obvious. I tend to have this little bit of luck whereby whatever illness I tend to have a variety of it, which means that I can probably try and deal with it in a reasonably simple, straightforward way. Testicular cancer is a very nice, easy one to deal with. You take the testicle off, and hopefully that's it done. Mine
Yeah.
did spread straight afterwards, up
Okay.
to nearby actually where the transplanted kidney was. But and they were. There were limitations onto how they could treat it, because you can't have chemotherapy because that will ruin the transplanted kidney and all this sort of stuff. So I had to have different treatments and things, but I've not had a reoccurrence of it, and I'm almost at the end of the 5 year period where they monitor it now. So I think I've probably got one more outpatient appointment left, and I only go to those every 6 months, and hopefully, fingers crossed, it's all remains gone, and just crack on.
Absolutely, mate. You've talked us through some really great points and given us some really great outsights and stuff. What's the biggest takeaway point you think you could give to our listeners? I mean, take your time on this one, but one thing you think you could take away from the whole experiences you ever had through what you've had to go through.
I sometimes I just think that yeah, I don't want to go off on a tangent rambling, so let me just have a think. You know, it's
Absolutely.
I always take things relatively positively, you know, and I don't think, well, why is it me? Because cripes, you'd implode if you started thinking about things like that, you know.
Absolutely. Yeah, 100%.
You just deal with what you've been given, and you know, it's I'll always take something positive out of it. I'll always find that there's something to be learnt from something that's happened every single time. And you know, even if it's just the fact that I needed another kick to a kick up the butt in order to remind me to stop dilly-dallying about this, that, or the other, and stop wasting time, and you know, go and do something that's going to be a bit more fulfilling. I find things very frustrating at the moment because my level of fitness is really, really bad. Just because I think it's down to just level of fitness. Because after having spent a lot of time sort of shut away during COVID, and then
Yeah.
some t a lot of time off in between, you know, the surgery on the shoulder and getting back to work again and stuff like that. You know, I don't have the ability to do as much as I used to, and I'm trying to work my way out of that. Because with a 14-year-old, you know, I can't walk around a golf course with him, for example. You know,
Yeah.
which is ridiculous. That's ridiculous. I'm only 55. You know, it's I should be doing things like that. So, trying my best to improve things there. And there's some things going on at the moment that have meant that I've got some very strange blood results, and I've had to go back in a couple of times because there's things happening at the moment which we can't really understand or explain why that's going on. But as a takeaway, I think try and keep a smile on your face. Have a positive outlook. There's always somebody worse off if you're going to hospital.
Yeah, that's
If you,
very true.
you know, and makes you think, thank goodness at least I'm not them, because you know, everyone has challenges. And I think, you know, you never know from the outward appearance of an individual what they go through, you know, themselves or their family in the background, you know. And I think just always be a bit understanding that some people have challenges that are bigger than you know, your day-to-day existence, you know. And just always try have an understanding outlook when meeting new people and talking to new people.
Absolutely, it's definitely like having same outlook on everybody you ever meet. You never know what anyone's really been through, do you? Unless you get to know them. So that's the
Exactly.
way I try to look at it. You know, you don't ever go, "Oh, why me?" It's never really a why me attitude. It's very much, "Why not me?" in a way, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I mean, I say to this quite a lot of people, and I don't know if you feel the same, that I'd rather have this happen to me than my close family or friends. A, because I feel like the way I've developed, so I can manage it better, and yeah, I'd obviously never want them to go through what you have to go through and endure. Anyway, David, thank you very much for coming on the podcast. It's been a pleasure to be part of the ROH boys with you, and
Yeah,
I've hoped you
definitely.
enjoyed coming on.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, it's I think the sense of humour, the chat, the banter when us and Sonny were on that ward made that stay just you know, I almost didn't want to leave because there was so
Yeah,
much fun being had. You know, it was hilarious. It was very, very funny, and I just think, anybody with any illness, you've got to have a sense of humor about it, because otherwise, you know, it's very easy to sort of like implode on yourself. And well, I wouldn't say it's very easy. It's not in my psyche to do that, but I think I can understand there are people that take things very, very difficult. And I just think you just need to focus on the things that are important in the world, which are your family and on, you know, and those sorts of things, and not worry too much about what's going on at that particular point in time, you know.
absolutely. Well, Dave, thank you very much for coming on, and
Oh,
all the best.
Thank you, Henry. Good to see you.
Well, I must admit, I've struggled to edit this down into a podcast episode size just because of the long chat we had. It was over a couple of hours, or just under a couple of hours, but it really felt like not an interview, but a couple of mates catching up, which really was the amazing thing about this episode. I think for me, Dave's been through so much, but he's such a normal bloke. His character and his motivation to just keep on playing through is something else, and it's very rare nowadays that you get to see that sort of character. For me, the whole episode was great about the focus points of how your stay in the hospital can change because of your outlook. People get through difficult times in many different ways, and people get given proper shit in their lives, I have to admit. But your outlook on things can really change your perspective, your recovery time, and actually what you're having to face and deal with. As Dave mentioned, while we're in hospital, you do see people that are going through a lot worse times than yourself. And that really makes you feel like you need to make the most of what you have got still left. And I think that's the biggest takeaway point we have from this episode. But nonetheless, Dave's been a great mate, and Sonny as well. And I hope to keep in touch with them over the next couple of years. It's been really great just to have that friendship through this hard and difficult time. Speaking of friendship though, next week we have another amazing guest, and it's a very different guest because I'll announce it now, it's my best mate Archie. We're going to be talking about the support network, how that can be affected. I know we sort of vaguely touched it on this episode. We dive into it a lot more in the next episode. So tune in next week for me and my best mate Archie. It's a very interesting episode because it's two mates just basically falling around recording random stuff. But hopefully you enjoy it. So, of course, follow us all on our social media pages at Down on the Farm Podcast. Listen to all the other episodes out there, and we'll see you next time.